I'm your host, Brian, and this is Infection, the Survival Podcast. This was recorded on Saturday, September 15th, 2018, episode 191. You may have heard, if you're watching our Twitter, that Nick is unavailable due to the recent hurricane down in the South Carolina area, North Carolina area. And so I'm going to be doing a quick episode here, because of course we don't want to break our tradition of having an episode each and every week. And so this will be a little bit of a different pace, but hopefully you enjoy it. We'll give you some information. There's some really awesome news that came out this past week. And we'll just do this kind of rapid fire. So this may be a little bit shorter episode, but we'll hopefully get some stuff in here, or I'll get some stuff in here that you will enjoy. And hopefully we'll get a little message from Nick before we go live on this, and we'll hear how he's doing. So first of all, if you're watching some of the news that's been coming out, you may have noticed that there was some big information this past week that was released about H1Z1 and the future of H1Z1. Jace has been sitting there and just teasing constantly on Twitter about something happening soon, you know, being under NDA, and just people are starting to get aggravated, saying, you know, what in the world is coming? And there's been a recent notice that he put out saying that pretty much a very large investor has created a joint venture with Daybreak. It's NantG Mobile LLC. This was formed to publish, first of all, mobile versions of Daybreak's current games. So this would be H1Z1 EverQuest, but also to build and publish your video games across all platforms. So this will be for consoles as well. And also they're taking full control. And this is something that kind of surprised me, full control of the PC version of H1Z1. So the PC H1Z1 Battle Royale game that you know is King of the Kill, and then change back to H1Z1, that will be under the full control of development. Now, Daybreak is saying that they will retain the artistic direction, but they will not be doing development on this game, or, you know, creating assets, whatever it is. So this is a huge change. And I think Jace, we'll get to some audio clips here in just a second of him talking about some of these big changes that are going to be happening. But I think that this is we understand our game is going to die. At this pace, there will be hardly anyone playing the PC version of H1Z1. And I think that also they've realized that their development team, they've fired most of their people. They cannot rapidly develop, make big changes to the game with the current kind of minimal set of people that they have right now. I think they're running at a minimal set of people just so that they can keep skins coming out. They can keep things working. You know, if a bug comes out, they're able to try to fix that. But this is going to be a very big difference. There were some issues with the recording. I think that they didn't get everything recorded properly. So I did catch on the live version them talking about how they're going to be bringing some people in from this development team to work in the offices at Daybreak, just so they have access to some of the people to ask questions and figure out things as they're getting these initial versions made. H1Z1 will be named a different name. So they're going with Z1 Battle Royale. So they're getting rid of the H1. First of all, we've always said, hey, there's no virus in the H1Z1 Battle Royale game now. It has nothing to do with zombies at this moment. Why is it called H1Z1? And I think that they're really wanting to separate from the H1Z1 name that they've kind of tarnished. This game is no longer, it's not in high esteem of the community at the moment. It's just everybody is bashes on the game, says, hey, here's all these problems. Now, I don't know that this is going to mean that there's a change in engine. This will be something that's interesting. He hasn't hinted at that, but this will be a totally different development team. We will be bringing back some old faces. So perhaps some people that were let go, that they deemed to be competent, developers, artists, things like that. They said that they're going to be bringing on some of those old faces, but also they're going to be bringing in new people that they're hoping will revitalize the PC-based version of the H1Z1 Battle Royale game. And so this is something that I did not see this level of change coming. This was something that was kind of a surprise to me. But I mean, if you've listened to us over the past couple of years, this is the kind of thing that I have said needs to happen with this game. It needed a reboot. This game needed to start over. And I wish that they would be going to a different engine. If they're going to be going to mobile and doing all these things, it would kind of make sense, because I can't imagine that working under Forge Light is easy to try to then publish that to a mobile game. So I don't know exactly what they have in mind, how much of a total start over this will be, but this will be interesting to see as it unfolds just over the next couple of months. They're wanting to do kind of a rapid development, but he did mention, because this whole podcast started because of H1Z1's Just Survive. And that was, for us, an excellent game. Most of it we talked about is the community that we had around us, the people that we placed in and played with, and brought into the group and just made that camaraderie. And that's what made it fun. Maybe not, it wasn't Just Survive so much, but he did reference, you know, what is the state? Because a lot of people have been tweeting him saying, you know, save Just Survive. What are you going to do about Just Survive? So here's a little clip just explaining where Just Survive is and how it may play a role coming up in this new Z1 Battle Royale.
We are going to add back into Z1 Battle Royale a PvE mode, okay? So the PvE mode with zombies and everything. So because you need think of it as a dungeon to go achieve, to get achievements, to go have fun when maybe you're a little tired of playing BR.
It's so important to have that type of environment where you can go in and grind and play Battle Royale and also have other things to do that grant rewards, and then you start getting rewards for doing stuff in a PvE dungeon or a PvE mode that you couldn't have gotten in the other one. Yeah. But here's the important part. If we have skins that you can earn in a PvE mode, you get to wear them in the other modes.
Right, of course.
It doesn't matter.
But we are going...
So this is where he's talking about having a PvE mode. It does not sound like Just Survive. This is not an open world survival game. But it is an excuse for them to bring zombies back into Z1 Battle Royale. Zombies had no point before. They did do some little tests, I remember, for a period of time of having a game mode with some zombies mixed in. Probably because of performance reasons, they turned that back and undid it. But it sounds like they're not going to be doing Just Survive in the way that we think of Just Survive. Sounded nothing like they were doing base building. As you said, PvE, not a PvP type of a format. So I don't think it's what everyone is asking for, but I think they're looking at, hey, if we've got a competent set of developers and people that can really put out this content, this is not going to be a super difficult thing for them to do. Of course, this is kind of pie in the sky. I think this is a very optimistic attitude. If you have the right development team, I think you can be optimistic. I mean, we've seen with Ark, we've seen with just other games that are able to really put out content. Now, my thing that I've always hinted back to, it comes, the engine might have something to do with that. I don't know if Forge Light is the best platform to really rapidly develop on. And that's what I'm really interested in seeing, is that going to change? Now, the number of updates that we've seen recently, the pace of the updates has been very disappointing. And I know that Jace, if he had it his way, it would be much faster, but a lot of people were asking, you know, when are we going to see these updates? When are these updates? No, let's hear it from Jace.
There's been like this, like no real updating for like the last month and a half or more, right? And what's interesting, that's kind of what's happened historically with the game, where it kind of go quiet and you'd have these big sort of buildups and then boom, these moments. That here's everything. That's over. I'm so not interested in us doing that. What I want is us to rapidly make the changes as we're able to get them out as they come. We're not going to sit on something unless we absolutely have to. Like, we can't put this out because this piece has got to go. And but other than that, from this moment on, the sheer volume of updates that you can expect is going to be far greater than what you're used to historically. There's been like,
it really sounds like they're going to go for less of the, this is a total groundbreaking, everything's changing update like they've tried to do in the past. It seems like they would have kind of fixes here and there in the history of H1Z1, but they would save up and do something. Okay, we're going to totally rework the way that the guns work, or the damage system, or just whatever it was. They would save up and do them all at once. Now, I think that they found that the negative aspect of that is that now you have a big chance that if it was a bad patch, the combat update, most people would agree that the combat update was a negative thing for the game. That's when the numbers really started to drop. If they would have done that slowly over time, they would have perhaps, before they've completed that set of updates, realized, hey, we've got a problem here. People are not taking to this like we were hoping they would. Let's start to reverse some of those changes. But because they did it all at once, they turned around and had major problems and really lost a lot of players, people that were playing consistently, especially the other Twitch streamers, stopped playing at that point in time. So this is something that sounds like they're going to every week, kind of like what we originally saw. This is the thing that really was the lifeblood of the podcast. Back when we first started almost, 200 episodes ago, they were putting out consistent regular updates that we'd report on and that we would discuss, and we would come up with theories of where it was going, what was going to happen. It was almost impossible at a period of time when they were putting out less than one update a month. And so I think that this will be much better for them to get feedback from the players and to have people feel like that there's consistent work being done on this game, which I think we really felt stopped happening. There was not consistent work on this game. Another thing they're looking at doing is trying to get value back in the skin market. One thing I think they did not realize and that they really dropped the ball on is that they didn't do the skin market in a proper way to where they would make the type of money that they should be making from it. They were wanting people to sit there and buy crates. But most of these trades were happening externally to Steam. They were happening in trades and other places were making money. So I think they're trying, but they are trying to make it to where there is a value in the skin, and that will get people to start trying to play again. One way that they'll be doing this is having what they're considering more rare items. So they have something now called Legendary, and I'll let Jace explain this.
Did you ever see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? There were like 5 golden tickets, right? Put all these chocolate bars out there, but there were only 5 golden tickets. Similar idea. A new crate comes out, and there will be a certain limited number of legendary items, super rare items, that you could theoretically get out of all the crates. So let's just say, this is an example. Let's say there's only 10. Now, as long as those 10 have not been discovered, the crate will be for sale. It'll keep coming out. And whenever one of them is discovered, everyone will be told, a golden ticket has been found, a legendary item has been found. There are only 9 left, okay? Once the last one is found, that crate goes away forever. Then a new crate will come.
So this is a very unique concept. Rather than having a set amount of time between each crate, so saying that this crate is going to be available from August 1st to, maybe go for a month and a half, 2 months at max, they're going to be having it to where this crate is actually dependent on the rarity. So let's say whatever percentage that this crate has a, this legendary drops at. So the more people that buy that crate in whatever amount of time, you know, there will be that small percentage of the legendary item is going to drop out of that. If there's 10 total, however long it takes for them to sell those 10, then that will determine how long that crate is out there. And so this, the only way that I could see this really backfiring for them is, let's say that there's a not very popular crate. You know, maybe there's a crate that people are like, eh, I don't like the skins in that, or the legendary item doesn't really appeal to them. That crate could be out there for a very, very long amount of time. Otherwise, you may, I mean, or you may have the opposite effect. You may find that people are like, oh, I'm going to buy 100 crates. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. People threw a lot of money at H1Z1 originally, figuring out in 100 crates, you know, I have this percentage chance of getting this legendary item. If you get the legendary item, there's only 10 of them in the world. You know, that may be something that sells for $1,000. I mean, who knows where the market may go, but I think that that's what they're really aiming towards, is getting that rare and unique item that then is worth something. So people look at it and say, hey, look, I got this. Because that's one thing they really lost with people being able to trade items. And rareness didn't really come down to being able to get a skin, you know, from a crate. It came down to, am I willing to pay this much money in a trading market, you know, to get this skin? And so this, I mean, this, you could win this, or they may be sold, but I don't think that really solves the problem. I think with this next thing, I think they're really trying to solve the problem of creating something that is truly uniquely rare, and perhaps, you know, you having it means that you actually accomplish something.
And you get into the showdown, and you win, or you get top 10, and you get an animated gold AR, then we name that item Zim's gold AR.
No, it would be Prodigy Aces.
Prodigy Aces, oh. Right? Or, you know, whoever, whatever your name is.
Whatever your name is, basically so, gets burned into...
Name it for it someone
gets,
else.
It gets burned into the item. Yeah. So if that person trades it, and it gets traded and traded and traded and traded and traded, you know that was that person's AR.
Yeah, they can't take the achievement. They can take the item, but they can't take the achievement away, because that item permanently has that, the person who achieves it, name yeah. on it. Now, you don't have to sell your gold AR, of course, right? You don't have to trade.
And you.
So this sounds to me a lot like, I guess, a Super Bowl ring, right? I mean, you're entered in some sort of competition. You win. They then create a unique item that is just for you for that achievement, as they're saying. I think that that gives them the opportunity. I mean, if you win a thing, you could either be a person that really wants to collect those and show them off, have something when you play in the game. It says you were killed with this person's. I mean, that would mean something. If this person killed you with a gun that's named after them, that means that you are the person that won that tournament. Otherwise, you could turn around like the Super Bowl rings. You could then sell it. Say, hey, here is the gun that I won from winning this tournament. And it will permanently be that gun. There's only one of that gun for winning the tournament. You know, they could turn around and sell for $1,000 or whatever amount of money that people would, you know, value that person's name for. And so, I think they're really trying to create that sense of value again, because we all saw the tanking of the skin market that happened with H1Z1. I think they're trying to build that back up. And so I'd be interested to see how this works out. Jace is very confident, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. This is something that I like to give people the benefit of doubt and let them prove me wrong. This may be something that over time we see, all right, he's not accomplishing the things that we were thinking he was going to accomplish. He's not getting these things done in the time that he was saying he would. Then I'll be more likely to criticize. I think that he has a lot of just love for this game, or he has a lot of money invested in it. I mean, either one, it's a good motivation. I know that they really were hoping to have this competitive league, the Pro League, take off and be able to have a large audience. And with the game really going downhill, because I know that he bought into that, started to promote it before the downturn of H1Z1, and that was not something he had control over. But I think he sees, if I get invested in this and I really work on it, my other investment will pay off. And so if he can get it to where these really popular streamers, the really talented streamers, the really talented teams that are out there, the professional playing teams, if they can get out there and get excited for this game and start streaming it and start talking about it and get people watching the live streams of the competitions, that will pay off in his other investment. So this is a very big move. I mean, it's kind of an all in, at the table type of a move. But I think that that's what this game needs right now, because there's so much competition at this moment with other BR games coming out. Call of Duty, if you look at their, they have a BR game that looks very polished. It looks very good. And for me, I think it's more of a competition to PUBG than at this moment, H1Z1. But I think that all these games that are being put out now by AAA studios that are in the battle royale genre, I think that for them to be able to compete against those types of platforms, they're going to have to come up with something that's unique. And so maybe having the PvE mode that lets you get skins. I mean, this may be that Z1 Battle Royale is a skins game. It is not so much a PvP, PvE game. It's about, hey, the goal is to get these crazy skins, all these unique skins, and that is the game itself. I'm not sure exactly, as I said, where it's going to go, but hey, we'll watch it. We'll see where it goes, and I wish them the best of luck. Hopefully, we'll be able to get one of them to come on and discuss this with us. I know once they get the ball rolling a little bit more, get the team together, start putting out these updates, we'll give them that amount of time to get it done, and then we'll approach them and say, hey, come tell us how the progress is going. Tell us what you see as coming up soon in the game, and hopefully this for them starts to pay off. Now, speaking of PUBG, I think they're kind of in a similar state. They're having to turn around and try to reinvent what the game is, get people interested in it, because there's a lot of competition. Also in PUBG, there's a lot of hackers. There's been bugs. For me, I've complained most about the movement system. I think for being a decent sized studio and having a good set of development behind it, and being on a really good engine, I was really hoping that they would make it to where moving around the game, they did do where you can vault and things like that. But it still just wasn't up to the level of what I would expect. And I think hopefully people will look, just for instance, go watch some of the streams of the Call of Duty BR. The visuals look very similar. I think that there's a little more color and things like that in the Call of Duty version. But look at how seamless the movements are and just how everything flows. I don't see why PUBG couldn't get that. I think Fortnite makes a very good example of it. I think they show it off very well of, here's how smooth and quick Unreal Engine should be. And then you turn around and look at PUBG, and I don't think it's there. But I think that with their recent, they're doing the push for the fixes and everything on PUBG. I think their goal is to make it work well and to hopefully cut down on the hackers and make it feel like this is a game that you can go and play and actually feel real competition in. Not having someone punch you through a wall, not having someone aimbot you, not having people ESP you every single game, which is how we felt with H1Z1 as well. That's really what kind of took away our joy of the game, is when every other kill, it's some guy that you know is a hacker because he's flying in the air, or he's shooting you through a wall, or just something stupid. So, I think that they're really trying to revitalize this game to save it, because all that competition makes it difficult. But the beauty of competition is that it creates an environment where these companies innovate. They come up with positive changes. They say, what do we have to do to make it so that the players want to play our game? And it's always done positive things. So what they're doing is improving the reward system. This is something that it says, over the past few weeks, we have been tackling some of the game's longstanding bugs and quality of life requests with the Fix PUBG campaign. In addition to these, we want to continue to reinforce the various elements that allow the players to enjoy PUBG. Among them is our brand new in-game reward system. They're calling it the Survival Supply System, and this is going to be introduced in Update 21. It says there's a number of reasons that players enjoy PUBG, from the realistic gunplay, you know, getting wins, collecting skins. It's important for us to have a variety of rewards available to our players, and we've been working on finding new ways to offer skins outside of locked crates. So the survival system and the restructuring of how the battle points are earned are the next step in that endeavor, and we would like to take some time to share a little bit about each. So the survival system, this is something that functions like a battle pass or an event pass, except there's going to be no max level, and there's going to be no paid pass. So as you increase your what they're calling survival level, it's a survival gauge they're going to be showing. And then in turn, it earns you these temporary or permanent items. This is really in line with what they've been doing on the mobile version. The mobile version has been kind of developed separately. It's been a different development team. It's gone more crazy with the skins. And they've kind of kept the same pace going with the desktop version of this game. And now we've got this where they realize, hey, this works on the mobile version. People like having even temporary items. That's something they do on the mobile version. You can have a skin that you only have for 6 days. It's not a permanent skin. And so some of these things that you'll be earning from this will be a limited time, or maybe an XP boost. So that is an example they're showing, you know, get 5 kills with the shotgun. Survive for 20 minutes. Revive 3 teammates. Those are things that will help you to earn these things. You get that, and then you hit claim. It gives you 4,000 XP. It gives you 5,000 XP. So that is something they're going to be doing with weekly missions and this whole leveling system in this. So you'll get a reward every 10 levels. So at a minimum, every 10 levels, you will get some type of an unlock that could be a permanent item or, you know, some of these temporary items. Also, they're improving how they're doing the battle points calculations. One thing they're trying to do is make it so that the rewards that you get at the end match maybe rewards you better for the type of playing you're doing. So right now it's kills plus damage dealt plus final rank equals your reward. That what they're going to be doing from now on is kills for plus damage dealt plus final rank plus play time. So the longer you stay alive equals your reward. I don't know how much I really like this, because there's some people that go and hide in a bush all game. This is going to reward those type of people a little bit more. It may lead to less interaction because you could be someone who just jumps in to a hot spot, you know, do a hot drop, get a bunch of fast points by killing a bunch of people. If you die, you know, what's the difference? You're getting a high reward. This may cause people to try to sit there and hide and avoid contact throughout the game just to get a higher reward if they don't feel like they're as confident with their shooting and things like that. So this is something that they are trying to rework. And this is something that we'll see. I mean, hopefully this does make an improvement to how people feel like they're getting rewarded through the game. It says players who wanted to focus on the survival aspects and didn't seek out kills were earning far less battle points. In addition, over 50% of all PUBG games are squad queues, which rewarded a lower overall BP compared to solo games. And so this is something, I guess they're encouraging that solo play. I don't quite get it for this type of a game. Why would you want to encourage people to avoid contact? But maybe, you know, they see some sort of a bonus in that. So it says battle point acquisition and the survival supply system are some of the ways we're looking to keep the game feeling fresh and rewarding for the PUBG community. We're in the early planning stages of other ways to drive these goals, such as Badge of Honor system that will hopefully provide continued enjoyment and fun to all players, and we'll continue to share our thoughts and ideas as they get further along. As always, they welcome your feedback on this newly changed and added content. So as they start to roll these things out, if you don't agree with them, make sure you let them know. Make your voice vocal and try to direct the game, because we don't want to have what happened to H1Z1 happen to this, to where they do something that really messes up the gameplay. But I think they're in that kind of survival mode as well. They want to make sure that people keep playing this game. So we'll see how it works, and we'll keep watching it over the next couple weeks. They're also doing a new game mode called Mutant Mayhem. Now, this goes through tomorrow as I'm recording this, but this was something that just ran for a number of days, started on September 13th through the 16th, so there's 3 days. And it says, it's time to lock and load and embrace your inner mutant. This week's war mode event is Mutant Mayhem, which loads out players with the brand new MK-47 Mutant Assault Rifle for some evening desert action. Care packages are disabled, and so that meaning that mutant at your side is your first and best option. So this is a war mode. All players spawn with this MK-47, a level 1 vest, and 100 rounds of 7.62. Killed players respawn in planes that fly by every 40 seconds, and eliminating an enemy earns your team 3 points, while knocking out an enemy earns you 1 point. Reviving a teammate will grant you 1 point as well. If no team reaches 150 points after 15 minutes, the team with the most points wins, and there's no vehicles. So no vehicle spawns in this one. This is a 4-person squad only, maximum of 40 players, so 10 teams. This is a sunset time. Red zones are disabled. Care packages are disabled. Kill spectating is disabled. And friendly fire is disabled. So hopefully you had a chance to play this one. And if you really liked it, make sure you let them know. And I think that they're kind of building up, finding what are the most popular game modes. And then I would think they would start to put that maybe in a random playlist. I mean, if this is something that people really enjoy, this would be something I think that they would make a drawing point, something that would bring players to the game and keep them playing when they get tired of that basic, you drop in, run, gun, loot, shoot type of a gameplay. This one creates that variety that I think that they're really looking for. And so I think they've got a number of these different game modes that they've done, and hopefully that this is the variety that people will see as the thing that sets us aside from other games, because you can get a ton of BR games that are very similar, but I think these different game modes, to where they can get a playlist of 6, 7, 8 different game modes that are truly unique, that will keep people playing over and over again and not feeling like it's a rinse and repeat type of scenario. Let's go ahead and move on to a little bit of Rust. And we'll start here with the video. So we will play audio, but this will be the video format that we will link to in the show notes.
Greetings, survivors and friends. ShadowFranks here with your weekly, nay, monthly update, because, as you're no doubt well aware, the big monthly patch splashed down yesterday, and I'm here to tell you what made it in, what didn't make it in, and maybe some other stuff too. Gloves, first of all. New features that if you've been watching you'll know about anyway, but I'll just mention briefly again. We now have uncraftable smoke grenades. Get them for 10 scrap each down at the bandit camp, then lob them wherever you want to cause confusion for about 50 seconds. The amount of particles in the smoke's been lowered a lot too to help with performance. Pumpkins and corn now stack to 20. They don't have condition anymore, but you can only pick them when they're fully ripe, and they'll stay ripe for 48 hours before dying. Also, health over time takes longer now to convert to actual health. Repair bench shelves can now hold deployables such as pookies, fires, and even boxes. Plus, you can wedge a box under the barbecue as well. A recycler has made its way into the wheelhouse at the dredge in the bandit camp, and now only the person interacting with a recycler at the time can turn it on or off. Bandit guards don't take kindly to smoke grenades being thrown around, and sleepers will be summarily dispatched after about a 20-minute kip inside the camp. Plus, these chaps are better shots now and more reactive to things like explosions. All also because somebody is guaranteed to take offense at virtually anything these days, and this has to be avoided at all costs for some strange reason, there's now an option in the menu to hide the contents of players' signs. Please note, though, this doesn't make the sign itself invisible. You numpties. In addition to these changes, a number of deployables will decay a lot faster now when placed outside of building privilege, such as furnaces, water catchers, refineries, barricades, and benches, and this should help to keep Rust Island tidy. A lot of work with AI has been going on behind the scenes, and you'll notice the fruits of this labor if you trundle down to pay the scientists a visit in the military tunnels. Their sensory systems have been reworked to allow them to hear footsteps, explosions, and gunfire. They can think ahead when making decisions, are better at using cover, and have figured out how to use syringes and throw grenades. This behavior is limited to the tunnels right now, but should spread to the rest of the boys in blue in time. Animals also roam better now. They should stay within a radius of the area they spawned in, and so shouldn't all end up milling around at the seaside. This month's dev blog was titled The Performance Update, though, so we should really talk about that now, as let's face it, that's pretty much all you chaps care about these days. Well, you can start lovingly stroking your potatoes and reassuring them now, as the team have spent the last month concentrating heavily on performance and optimization. There's a lot to digest here, so I'd recommend reading it if you can. Read, but I'll do my best to summarize it for you. First of all, the Bandit camp received a lot of optimizations. This included both art and code, LOD distances and culling on various foliage. Also, draw calls for swamp trees were halved. Talking of trees, as I mentioned last week, a new system to limit tree meshes has been introduced, and an option's been added to allow you to take advantage of this. This will force trees beyond the set limit to render as billboards and can really help you out in the old dense forests. So have a fiddle and see how it goes for you. A lot of CPU performance bottlenecks were removed over the last few months, but now a new feature from Unity has been implemented. Graphics Jobs makes better use of multi-threading. The upshot is that Rust should now be utilizing your GPU a lot better and isn't CPU bound anymore on most hardware, so graphics settings should have more of an effect on frame rates. Garbage collection was improved in a number of areas, such as ambient sounds and image effects. Workshop skins are now all included in the main game install, which means they no longer need to be downloaded on the fly, and a third iteration of prefab pooling was implemented this month. Not only is it more efficient for the garbage collector, but it takes effect much sooner to reduce frame drops. There were additional improvements to camera movement, an FPS issue caused by name tags was addressed, and a specialized renderer for imposters was written to maximize their performance. Terrain texture quality should now properly downscale in line with whichever settings you use, with obvious benefits for vegetable-based machines. And something else that might be worth turning off for you is occlusion culling, which at the moment isn't giving the advantages that it should do, so it's probably best to experiment here and see which setting works best for you. And lastly, graphics-wise, atmosphere and fog volumes are updated to be visible from the outside looking in, which means you can see the fog in the Bandit camp from up to 500 meters. This obviously makes the transition much smoother than just suddenly fog. Well, that's what made it in this month, and some hopefully significant improvements to performance. But what was left out? Well, a lot of you I know were hoping for some Captain Phillips roleplay and wanted to see the cargo ship hove into view off the coast. Sadly, although all the artwork's finished at the moment, it would only work as a static monument due to some extra code being needed, as the plan is to have it circling the island, so the team have decided to hold back until this is done. The slot machine I showed you last week is still only at the artwork stage 2, and the L96 and scope you're all craving is still awaiting implementation, I'm afraid, so you'll have to find some slightly closer range ways of having fun for the time being. But finally, it appears that three different types of glove are soon to slide onto the game, namely burlap, road sign, and tactical. They're all designed to take advantage of the new first-person clothing models, as you can see, and the team are knuckling down to get them added for the next patch, so rest assured, it won't be long until we can get our hands in them. Thanks for watching. You're up to date now, hopefully. If you enjoyed the experience, please leave me a like, sub, and comment, and join me over on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, Discord, or my Steam group, whichever floats your boat. You can also support me on Patreon and get some sweet perks. I shall catch you all soon, of course, but in the meantime, keep calm and stay rusty. Cheerio.
Thank you, Shadowfrax, and hopefully if you're a Rust player, you'll see some benefits from those performance updates. Looks like they're adding a decent amount of content as well. They haven't been putting out as many timely updates, I guess. It's not the weekly updates that they were doing before, but it looks like they're really trying to make some big improvements, and so make sure you check that out. We'll have a link to the updates page as well on our show notes, so If you're interested in that, just click our show notes on our infectionpodcast.com website. And that is Rust. No Man's Sky, they also put out an update this week, and not the biggest of changes. They did add some additional items to the Polo's Quicksilver Synthesis bot. Fix an issue that would cause discoveries to stop saving. Fix an issue where players with a specific number of inventory slots would have some slots hidden by other UI elements. They fix an issue that would cause community research portals not to return players to the correct galaxy after mission completion. Ensured that the first entry in the space station teleport list will take players in the incorrect galaxy back to their home galaxy for people maybe that were affected by that. And then they fixed an issue that could cause portals to close and not lead players back to the correct planet. Fixing issues where players would become stuck on a black screen. Fixing issues where the starship was unable to land after changing missions while facing a mission marker. And then fixing an issue where players with corrupt saves would be recovered but have no ship. So this involves instances where the ship was the corrupt data and so ships have been restored to default. Also, they have gone in there and they've been making some changes to the tessellation. And tessellation is where there's bumps in the terrain. Usually on a lot of the old games, prior to maybe 4 years ago, unless it was a single player game, you didn't really see bumps in the terrain. These big open world games would just have a texture that sits over the whole world and there wouldn't be much variance. You maybe would have rocks and things like that sitting on top of them, but they didn't have that tessellation like you would see. So with the newer engines and the changes and the improvements in computing power, they've gone through and they've been able to use tessellation more and have those bumps. It does do a performance impact on your system. And so if you have maybe a low-end system, something that struggles to play most games, you would want to turn tessellation off. On here, they have a new dynamic tessellation, which enables detailed terrain height maps without sacrificing performance. So this is something they've been able to do. So you should be able to get that improvement of that feel on the PS4, Basin Pro, and the Xbox One X of having that tessellation on there without having a huge performance impact. And so that's something that they've been working on. They did add some new custom options for the body shape. And so if you create your character, you might want to go and check out some of the different body shapes that you can do on there now. No Man's Sky. Glad to see that they're still putting things in there. They did add an emote, some big statues that you can place around your base that you have and that are shaped like some of the mechs and some of the different NPCs that you run into. So I guess a Gek and a Sentinel is what those are based on. And then they added the sleek, stylized Blazing Orbit helmet. And so that's a fully recolorable customization option to the Anomaly suit. So if you play No Man's Sky, hopefully you enjoy those updates. Another one that's come out with some updates recently is Survive the Night. And they did their 0.0719 patch. And this is moving over to their experimental branch today. So that was on the 8th. We're running a little bit late on this episode. But on there, they did fix some issues with the game starting in windowed mode. They'd reduced the overall disk size of the game from 10.5 gigabytes to 8.5 gigabytes, probably getting rid of their optimizing assets or getting rid of some of the excess ones that maybe they had there during development. And then quite a decent number of fixes. So one thing they did do is upgrade their engine for this patch to Unity 2017. They began this in Unity 5. And that was over a year ago. And so they did this update to get some of the advantages of the more recent versions. And one thing is this is the Unity 2017 LTS long-term support. You hear a lot about that with Linux, where it's one that will be receiving patches for a longer period of time. So it's one that usually if you're going to build a game and not constantly update the engine, you want something that's going to be stable for a long period of time. You can go to this and then leave your game on it and not worry about them switching it to not supporting that old version anymore. This is something you don't really see. For instance, Unreal, they don't really do an LTS version. They'll put out 4.20, you know, that 4.19. But there's not really a version that they, over a long period of time, update. There's not like a 4.18.7. You know, they'll do like a 4.18.2 or they'll maybe get up to .3 and then they put out the next version. So I think this is kind of a benefit of Unity, is that you can have a version of the engine that if you don't want to constantly be having to rework the game and put in major big changes and it maybe have such drastic overhauls that you have to do based on major updates to the engine, on Unity you can go to one of these long-term versions and leave it. I do this with servers quite a bit on my Linux side, is, you know, put the server on an LTS release and I'm able to run that server for 3 or 4 years without having to worry about them dropping off support. So they did do some shadow improvements and particle improvements, and then future proofing, you know, staying on newer builds of Unity keeps us up to date with the newest features and support. They wanted to make sure they didn't fall behind. They are making some improvements. They're working on their .8 version, which is going to help with the reinforcement fortification system for the buildings, you know, placing objects on the windows, the boards on the windows, to be able to block zombies from being able to get in. I know that's something that they're really aggressively working on. Also, zombies coming through windows and things like that. The placement system. They got a lot of good updates. And I haven't seen the popularity around this game as I've seen with some other games on launch. And I haven't really heard them pushing as well. I mean, it's not like they're... I think they're wanting to get their game at a state where it's ready to get attention. I think they're just putting their head down and getting all the features in there. But I haven't seen them really pushing Survive the Nights that much. And I would hope that the reason is because they're wanting people to come in and start playing the game when it's far enough along to where there's content to play. Because we've seen that be the damaging aspect of a lot of these games, is when they don't have the content that they need. People start playing and they hit that ceiling. We saw that with Conan. Conan was a perfect example of people going in and playing the game and saying, oh, this is great, and then hitting that content wall. There was no more to do. Conan, rather than saying, oh, we'll keep playing, we're working on it, they let people kind of drop off. They came out with a number of updates, fixed everything, and then kind of relaunched. I mean, they said, we're coming out of alpha, come try our game again. And people loved it. A lot of people play that game and they really enjoyed it. So this is something hopefully we'll see as this comes along. It becomes a stable game. There's not a lot of survival, what I would consider true survival games out there that are multiplayer. So I think that this still has a place in the genre to be able to play. So that is Survive the Nights. Also, Elite Dangerous. They came out with their 3.2.1, and this is a very small patch. They just had two fixes for, actually three fixes. They have one for two for ships, and then one for the weapons. So on the first one, they, for their Alliance, Challenger, Chieftain, and Crusader, they fixed various visual issues with the hardpoints. The Lance Guardian fighter, they addressed an overheating issue when firing. And then with their weapons, fixed large missile racks being unable to resupply ammunition using synthesis. There we go. I can say that word, I swear. Synthesis. All right, we got it. And so that was 3.2.1 that came out this past week. So if you play that, I mean, probably very small chance that you ran into that. Not a huge update, but that did come out. Now, one that we did talk about at PAX, this is something that was very big, was the new Realm Royale update that they're coming out with. Update 8, this one got rid of the whole class system. This is something that they told us we hadn't heard anything about, but we got directly from one of the developers saying that they were going to be removing the class system. They did do that. And says all skins may now be used on the base character. So you don't have to have a specific look. You can just make your character look how you want them to do. And then they've added a system called runes. Different runes that they have available now are the movement speed rune, CC, so crowd control reduction. So it reduces the strengths of knockbacks that maybe people can affect on you, make it so you're not as able to be knocked out of combat. Passive repair, armor potion, lifesteal, reload speed, headshot damage, mount speed, weapon damage, healing, movement cooldown reduction, ability cooldown reduction, revive time, chicken speed, and chicken health. So those are all the different runes that you can put on your character to really customize and create that, I guess it would be a custom class of character that you would want to do. They went through and made some adjustments to the weapons as far as headshot damage. Legendary weapons now have an element associated with them, so each weapon will only have one element available. And then the following weapons are available in slot one and fire projectiles. So they have a crossbow, a longbow, plasma launcher, slug rifle, sniper rifle, stone spear, and throwing axe. And then they have a set of weapons that are available in slot two and are instant fire, and that's the assault rifle, burst rifle, heirloom rifle, revolver, shotgun, SMG, and the sword. So also they have abilities. There are now only two ability slots, basic abilities and movement abilities. Legendary abilities will now have some benefit associated with them. And so you have barricade, blink, charge, concussion bomb, deploy turret, dodge roll, firebomb, flare, ghost walk, healing aura, healing totem, heroic leap, ice block, net shot, proximity mine, sensor drone, shielding aura, smoke screen, soar, and withdraw. So these are some of those are from the classes that they had before, and then they've added some new ones into there. So you'll actually have a little more variety than you were able to have with the class system. Also, they put in some different chests. Basic chests have some drops in there. They always drop a weapon or ability now. There's a chance that they will, a small chance that they'll drop a rune, and they might drop a potion or movement ability. Weapon chests have been changed to magic chests. So magic chests can be opened once by each player. Magic chests open. When open, they contain some drops, the same drops as the normal chests. And then they have Zeppelin chests. And then the forge, they went through, and each game, one third of the forges will be randomly deactivated. That's a huge amount of changes. And so if you haven't played this since they've done this patch, I would encourage you to check it out because this is a pretty drastic change. I know that they said that they were looking to make changes and come up with what they feel like is the most fun gameplay. And so hopefully you go in there and this is actually a beneficial improvement for you. If you think it's more fun, definitely let us know. I'd like to get people's opinion, maybe some people that play this game regularly. How do you feel about this new change to the system? Do you feel like it's a benefit? Do you think it's improved the feel of Realm Royale? Or has it made it less fun? So let us know. I mean, of course, you can always send us a message on Discord, maybe a reply on our YouTube channel, or you can send us a message on our website. I'm really interested to hear the feedback on this. Another game that I think we're going to dive into a little more next week, because I'd really like to get Nick's input on this, but we'll be talking about Scum some more in the next week or two. I've been playing a decent amount of it, so I do have some opinions, but rather than doing a monologue here and talking about Scum, I would prefer to have a back and forth on it. I will say, I'm not going to leave it at that, but I will say Scum is more fun than I thought it would be. I think that they've done a really good job with the overall mechanics. I think that the system that they've come up with for the player stats and everything, though at first seems really complicated, I think that it actually is implemented well. So they did put out a patch. It's at 0.1.17.8572 right now. And mainly they're doing fixes and things like that. They do have a roadmap of upcoming features that we'll go over in one of the next shows and look at some of the things they're looking to do. And I'll compare that to where it is now. Another one that I've been watching for a while is the Black Death. They put out a hotfix one and hotfix two. Mainly this is all around their Kings and Queens patch that they put out. That was a pretty big change, an update that they did. And so, you know, this is something that they're really looking at having to fix. Because when you do a big patch and make drastic changes, usually there's a lot of little bugs. So these are two pretty rapid updates that they put out. just fixing a lot of things, because now you have someone who's able to be the king and queen of I guess the server of that area. They've got just prisoners and all kinds of aspects of this game, different levels of players. And there's a lot of details. It's one of those, if you love details in games, this is the kind of game that you would want to play. It is a grind game for sure. You know, you can go through and earn enough money to buy your own house, and you actually have a physical place in the world that is yours. That's why they have the king and queen system. You actually can have a castle. So if it's one of those games that you don't play a lot of variety of games, you play like one game and then you try to get to where you have everything in that, kind of like what Elite Dangerous is, this is the kind of game you might like playing. So the Black Death, a very good game. Not quite as grindy as some of the other similar games, but you know, this is a pretty big RPG style game. Unturn, they came out with an update this week, and this is 3.26.2.0. Mainly some fixes on here. They did add some timers and alerts when someone is leaving a group. They added some of their curated workshop skins to the game. They added vehicle damage events. So I don't know how much of this is maybe specifically. Sometimes they'll put in patches that are kind of specific to a map because they're adding something that would benefit from this. But this is a 3.26.2.0, and that's Unturned. And then finally, we have Blackwake. A very fun naval combat style of game. This is 3.45, mainly quality of life updates. So both teams are now checked for balance. And so should be the difference be greater than 3, then ungrouped solo players will be alerted and then move back to the team select menu, where the usual sorting limitations will balance things out again. So they don't allow one side to have people drop out, and then it's a really uneven match. Map rotation is no longer random to make it feel more random, with less consecutive storms and nights. So that is one thing that they did. Suicide, /suicide can now be used like the old button should you become stuck. Grapples now glow yellow due to a point made by the community that a captain may not want them released, and a new player may immediately assume red means bad. Admins can now do a /alert message to notify, send a red notification to all players. When your faction is holding the booty in your base location, marker should force itself to display. And the fixing issue causing the holding by holding the booty during a round reset, and adjusted some of the false sensitivity variables. So that is a Blackwake update. And as I said, we're going to keep this episode a little bit shorter. It's not our usual 2 hours. Keeping this one to about an hour. And hopefully next week, Nick will have power and we'll be able to get him back. I'm not sure. I'm going to keep in communication with him. Hopefully we'll have a short video update of how he's doing. But I do know, you know, today he said he had, for the first time, some warm food. And so definitely is not the optimal situation there. You know, he's in a safe environment, so you don't have to worry about that. But he is helping to keep his radio station up, and I'm sure they'll have a lot of work flooding, working, waiting for power to come back on, things like that, over the next week or two. So tip of the week is where I go through and either I give a general gaming tip, maybe a specific game this week, because I've been playing it quite a bit. I'm going to be talking about Scum. But this is Tip of the Week. All right. Speaking of Scum, when I first started playing this game, I was concerned about the number of statistics on that initial screen. They have in there a stat screen for your character, and it can be really overwhelming when you first look at it. And it has a lot of details that will come in handy as you start to learn and understand your character and the game more. But at first, when you look at it, you're like, what does all this mean? And unlike most survival games, Scum they can pretty much, you can't just swallow every edible thing that you come across. A lot of games you'll see, oh, I'm just eating everything I see. On this, that can have a negative effect. Throughout the world, you'll find different types of food, pills, drinks, medicines, and all of these play some sort of a role in maybe combating different health problems you come across, or keeping your player healthy and full. And so to kind of measure this and decide what you need to eat when, they have on there a metabolism screen. And so you will see sicknesses under your BCU monitor. And so go to your metabolism screen that's at the top. And then you go to the stats page. And then on the left-hand side, you will see different ailments that you might have. So there's a tab called sicknesses. Hopefully there's nothing in there at the time. But if you've maybe fallen a short distance, maybe you were out in the rain for too long without a raincoat on, there may be something that you've come across, you've gotten sick. And so you'll see that listed there. And so it's a good way to see how you're faring in the game. If you notice that your health is dropping, you're not gaining health, then there is something that's an issue. So if you have a physical injury, try a bandage. If you're cold, try some sort of an antibiotic cold medicine. Maybe you've overdosed and you've swallowed too many of a certain type of a pill, given yourself something. They have charcoal tablets that you can take in there. And so I think this game has done a really good job of kind of taking that survival element to the next level. I didn't feel like it was overwhelming. It took me a little bit to understand it. But once I got in there, I realized, oh, each pill has a point. Like, there's a reason I have this type of pill. Or there's things that you'll come across throughout the game that play a role into that survival element. So hopefully you'll get in there. If you haven't tried it, it's a fairly cheap game, $20. You can get Scum, and it is very fun. I've heard it compared a lot to DayZ standalone, but even better. The environment is beautiful in the game. And so if you haven't had a chance, I would encourage you to get it, try it out, see if it's a game that you enjoy. Find some friends to play with. That does make it much more enjoyable. Make sure you find a group of people that are playing Scum and join them in the game. So hopefully you enjoy it. And that is Tip of the Week. If you want to find us, make sure you go to our website, infectionpodcast.com. Also, make sure you can follow our Twitter, because in there we will go through and give updates of maybe Nick won't be ready to do the live show again this Tuesday. We'll keep you updated on Twitter. And when we're ready, as soon as he gets power back and everything's stabilized, we'll go and do our normal live show on Twitch again. But keep updated on our Twitter. Also, go to check out our website for the show notes. This was an audio-only version of the show today. And so maybe there's a video or something you heard. We'll have links to those videos and links to all the different show notes that are and update notes that I was referencing throughout the show on there. You'll be able to check that out. Make sure also that you follow our YouTube channel. If you're not a member of our Discord, I really encourage you to go on there and come and join us, because that's where we hang out throughout the week. We communicate, play games together in those channels, and we have a really fun community to play with. And so if you haven't done that, make sure you go to our website on the right-hand side. It's Join Discord Server. And on there, it's a free app, very easy to download. And you'll be able to go and hang out. And we have a news channel in there. If you want to suggest something that we're going to discuss on an upcoming episode, that's a great way to do it, because we can go through and reference those. And I usually include, if I think it's something that pertains to what we're discussing, we'll include that in the show notes. So thank you for joining me. This is kind of a different episode. Hopefully you listened to the end, made it through. But this was a quick kind of recap of the week's updates, somewhat in the format of our normal show. And hopefully we'll be back to normal, and Nick will be back and ready to lead the charge on the directing of the show again. So thank you. I will see you guys next week. And if not, hopefully I'll see you in our Discord, and we'll play some games throughout the week. Have a good week and good night.